Om Shanti. So, firstly, just to introduce myself, because I think you all don't know me. So, my name is Maureen, but when I came into Gyan, I came at almost the same time as Maureen from London. So, she was called Mugli, and Didi Manmohini gave me the name Morni. So, I have two names, Maureen and Morni. And usually they don't know where to say I'm from, where I'm from, because originally I'm from Australia, but I haven't really lived there for 30 years. I've been in Asia, mostly Hong Kong, and now the last 3.5 years in India. So they don't know what to say. So just to tell you, we've only got 40 minutes, although the topic of soft power, I think we could go very deep into that. I don't think we'll have much time. But more to cover the news, I guess, of the project that has been going on, which was conceived in 2008, and our first dialogue was in December 2009. And the topic is the future of power. This program started as what was called Serve India, but it didn't go down well with that name, as you can imagine, because everyone in India has been doing tremendous service for more than 70 years, so that didn't go down too well. So then the name changed to the Future of Power, and it was initiated by Brother Nizar, who's from Africa, and why it was called Serve India, because previously he was the initiator of Serve Africa, and he was the instrument to open centers, I think, in 40 countries all throughout Africa, not just centers, but countries, you know, open up centers in 40 countries, mostly war-torn, many of them Muslim and different languages, Portuguese, French, all different languages. And I'll just tell you one sweet thing, because when he met Baba, he said, you know, we've managed to bring Baba's message to all the countries in Africa except one little island that we missed, a small island. I don't know the name of it. And Baba said, consider that to be your beauty spot. How lovely Baba's mind is. So then, you know, Nizar Bhai moved on to this thing of Serve India, because in 1975, Baba said in the Muli that the most important service for the double foreigners is, do you know? To awaken the Kumbhakarnas of India. And he said in that Muli, he said, you can open centers, you can do service, that's all okay. But the main thing is to awaken the Kumbhakarnas of India. And that was in 1975, and he's mentioned it from time to time, but we didn't really do it much. And so this is why this project was started, mainly with this in mind. And what that means to me, because it sounds a bit rude, doesn't it? It sounds like we think Indians, you know, need to be awoken and we're very clever. So it's a bit of a tricky concept as well. But what it means, especially now, is that India tends to follow what is outside of India. And I don't know if you're aware, but in 1850-something, Lord Macaulay, who came on a mission to India, he reported back to the British government. And this is very interesting. You can look it up on the internet. But he said, I have traveled, this is what he said in 1850, I have traveled the length and breadth of this country. I haven't seen a beggar, and I haven't come across a thief. Can you imagine? But this is what he says in this report. And these people have such self-respect that the only way we are going to he didn't say that word maybe, but dominate them, is to convince them that everything outside of their country is better than what's in their country. Very interesting. So it was very strategic to create this kind of concept or this idea that everything outside of India is better than what's here. And I think they were very successful because, you know, whatever comes, even the other day Golo was saying he got a pen, he went to a conference here, and on the pen on the outside it said, ink from Germany, ballpoint from Sweden, something like this. You know, so much value is given to what's outside. And of course that's eroded the self-respect. And also just a little side point, I was in the meditation hall. Baba used to come until 1983. He came in the meditation hall in Pandav Bhavan. And very interestingly, there was one muli where he kept looking at me throughout the whole muli. And it was, he was saying in that muli that we have to kind of, that the Indians are looking to the West and we have to show them what's here in India. And I mean, this is 19, maybe 81. And I'm thinking, why is he looking at me? Because, you know, there wasn't a very, very obvious reason. I was in Hong Kong. I was serving Indians to some extent. But when I started the Future of Power, I thought, wow, maybe so long ago he saw that part, you know, of really going around and saying to the people of Parat that what's here is what the world needs. And so since October, no, July, since I think July 2010, I've been based in India. And what my role is to go and meet the VIPs, because we have a dialogue and we only invite 40 people. We only want not more than 40 to come to the dialogue. And we invite people from all professions, so from the arts, from science, from the media, from the medical. And this is also very interesting because I think you know that Baba has 20 wings or departments, like science, medicine, media, arts. And a side point of this Future of Power, and what I say to people, is that all of these different professions have, in a way, given their power to business and politics. And especially in India, even the vice chancellors of universities are politically appointed and very powerful people. So, you know, all the powers got concentrated in business and politics, which is why power is now a very dirty word. When you say the word power, you know, people often go, what do you mean by power? And many times people have said to us, why are you using this word power? It's not a good word. And just the other day I was talking to Sister Carla. They're interested to do this in New York. And she said, but we might have to change the topic because power is a very unattractive word and it conjures up, you know, abuse and corruption and all these things. But actually that's what I find interesting about this also, because it's redefining power. Because this is what power is at the moment, but that's not what power should be, could be, was, you know, whatever you want to say. And what we actually say to these leaders, and especially Nizar, he's very direct with Gyan. When he gives his introduction at the program, he says, India was the world power for, he uses these words, 2,500 years. And until, and 2,500 years ago, it started moving from country to country. And he says that countries are like custodians of this world power for some time. You don't went to Egypt, to Rome, to China, to Greece, to England, and now it's in America. You know, world powers kind of associated now with America. But what people have been saying for some years, maybe around that time, 2008, 2009, people started to talk about a shift in power from the West back to the East. And there's many books written about this now. If you look at the, you know, in the bookshops, especially at the airports. And what most people are saying is that the next world power will either be China or India. Because population-wise, they're very powerful, which means, and also economically, compared to the rest of the world. I mean, India's been going down recently, but it was very, very strong 2 years ago. And so they're comparing these two countries. And so the storyline, if you like, for the future of power, and what we say when we go to meet the leaders in India, is that India was a world power. And when it was a world power, it used soft power. It was spiritual. It was based on culture and values. But as it's gone, you know, from country to country over the last 2,000 years, it's become very corrosive. And what we are saying to the Indian leaders is that power is coming back to India. It's not a matter of whether it will come or if it comes, because this is based on Baba's knowledge. Power is coming back to India. But also in the world, people won't dispute that. They might say, oh, it could be China. But it's not otherwise, you know, a very controversial point. So what we're saying is that it's not whether it will come back, if it will come back, but the point is when it comes back, which is not too far in the future, when it comes back to India, what kind of power is India going to bring to the world? Is it, and I ask people individually when I go around and meet all these big VVIPs, like, you know, heads of government, like the former, president of the BJP, one party, Narendra Modi, another party, you know, Sachin Tendulkar, the cricketer, Bollywood directors, all these different people. I ask them, can you see India being a superpower? Do you see India being a superpower with guns and money? And not one person can relate to that at all. And even that word superpower is like an anathema. It's very uncomfortable for Indians to think of this word superpower. It doesn't sit with them, which is why it should be the next superpower, because they don't have that feeling that we want to dominate the world at all. I've met more than 2,000 leaders now, people that are heads of, you know, nuclear power, scientists, you know, from the DRDO, the defense, and the, you know, all these people. And they say, no, we have to share power. It's not kind of suitable. They would, you know, that's kind of the word I would paraphrase. It's not really suitable for one country to be a superpower over the world. It just doesn't sit with them. And one of the nicest quotes that somebody said in the dialogue, and I think this summarizes pretty much, you know, what we hear from all of the leaders, is that Indians never used to think of themselves as powerful, but empowered. And this is what this person said. He said, we've never thought of ourselves as powerful, but empowered. When we think that we are powerful, we destroy everything. Isn't that true? You know, what a difference to feel that You're empowered. You're an instrument. That this is coming through you. That it's really God's power that's coming through. And when we start to think, I am powerful, that's when it really gets corrupted. And of course, in India, it is very corrupted. I mean, it couldn't be more corrupted, you know, in one sense, at the political level. But this is why it's being received so well, because people are really fed up with politics, basically. They really don't know what to do about the politics. And, you know, they would often say, but how can we change things? It's like impossible. It's not possible to change the political system. And I don't know, you probably don't know what's going on in India. Some of you might, but very interestingly, I also met this Arvind Kejriwal. He started a party 1 year ago called the Common Man's Party, Aam Aadmi Party, only 1 year ago. And its whole basis is against corruption. And his symbol is a broom. On all of his posters, there's an old Indian broom, you know, this kind of old-fashioned one. And what that symbolizes is that we have to sweep India clean of corruption. Now, whether he has the experience to lead the nation might be another question. But what's quite exciting and interesting, and especially from the angle of the future of power, he's only been in politics 1 year. He started this party 1 year ago. He's a former IAS officer, which is a very respected post in India, very high up in the government. He retired from that, but he won the election for the mayor in Delhi, so he became the mayor. But also because there wasn't a majority of votes in Delhi, you know, as a, you know, each state has their elections, because I mean, he got 39 votes and BJP, which everyone thought would win, got only 42. I mean, that's how strong he came in, and Congress 18, the ruling party, like this kind, almost, I think it's right figures, but anyway, like that. So the Congress party, instead of having a re-election, supported his party. So they're kind of in power at the moment. You know, but could you imagine, you know, in only 1 year of campaigning, but that's how fed up people are of corruption, that they would support such a newcomer in Delhi of all places. So it just shows that, you know, things can shift and change. So what, you know, but it also shows how fed up, and it's time, the timing for the future of power kind of is just right, because also what people are saying, that it's really only been in the last 10 years that things got so bad. I mean, it's been bad, no doubt, politically and corruption-wise for a long time, but they said in the last 10 years, and they also can see that it has got worse as the economy has strengthened. And people are starting to look to the West. So people are becoming more materialistic, more fashion conscious. I mean, Bollywood, I think, I haven't seen much of it, but they say it's more gross than Hollywood. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that's happening. So although maybe we are late to awaken the Kumbhakarnas, Baba said it in 1975, according to drama, as Baba said today, it seems to be really the right time, because if it wasn't so bad, they might not see that it's so necessary. And it's so obvious that by following these trends of the West, that things are deteriorating very fast. And so here comes a foreigner into the office, and what I usually start the conversation with is that, you know, for some time, people have been saying that there will be a shift of power from the West back to the East. And Everyone's only looking at India and China. So, of course, because I'm a Westerner, you know, if an Indian walked into the office and said that, they'd probably think, oh, all Indians think, you know, India's the greatest land. But for a foreigner to say it, you can imagine, like, they kind of, you can see already they're wondering what all this is about and how come a foreigner is saying this. And they start to listen. And then once, you know, we get into this conversation, then I usually ask them, do you think that soft power, the power of spirituality, values and culture, can rule the world? Now, what do you think people would say in your country, in America, in Australia, in... what do you think they'd say? Do you think soft power can rule the world? First of all, I think that it takes so long for them to understand what soft power is, right? But then to believe in it as a kind of a real power, I can't imagine many countries outside of India believing in soft power and having the faith in it that India has. So I would say 100%, not 50, 60, 70, 100% of these leaders say that it's very possible, and about 70% say it is the only power that we can rule the world with. I mean, not, they don't use those words. We can, I mean, it's hard to even use words that don't sound very hard power, like rule the world. But this is what is, you know, really deep within the Indian psyche, is this faith and belief in soft power. And what Nizar often says is that if you just scratch the surface of an Indian, spirituality is just there, you know. It's not very, you don't have to go deep. It's just below the skin. Sometimes it's got a layer of materialism and hard power and things, but it's just underneath. And how that also manifests to me is that I've been to so many great, big, powerful people, and they're often so humble and living in such humble accommodation, very simple, you know, and the way they receive us. And I mean, it's very, very great contrast, at least I feel, to the West, whereas usually the more money you have, the more ostentatious, the more, you know, things are there for show, like TVs and, I don't know, all the things that we buy to be comfortable and to show, both comfortable also. But I'll often meet big people and they're doing, that's the other thing, most Indians are doing a lot of charity, like not a little, I mean, so much you can't imagine. Most of the doctors I've met, and I mean, maybe I'm meeting the select people because we're choosing the people that would take this future of power forward. So maybe it's not even a majority, but I'm meeting top doctors. Like, really, we only go for the top two in every profession. Most of the doctors I've met have built a hospital and still do surgery in their hospital. It's not like they build it and then they sit in the office, but they're still, like, they're passionate about, you know, serving. So I went to see one doctor one Saturday night at 7 o'clock. He just came out of surgery, you know, and they work often 7 days a week. I'm not saying that's always good, but it shows their passion and their, you know, thing of service. Or I meet other doctors that work in a clinic in the morning and get a salary, and then after lunch they go to a free clinic and work for nothing to serve the poor. And I don't think, I mean, maybe there are, but I haven't met anyone that doesn't do a lot of pro bono, you know, free service for their patients. It's just normal and kind of, I think, for most of them, unthinkable to turn someone away because they don't have money. So, You know, I met one psychiatrist. He's one of the top psychiatrists in the whole of the north of India. And he was in Jaipur. And he was the president of the Psychiatry Association and has traveled overseas. I couldn't believe his clinic. It was such a, you know, really lousy. I don't know what word to use. But this tiny little clinic, and he was serving the poor. I'm sure they couldn't have paid more than 100 rupees. They were really looking very poor. And I felt, you know, in India they have this custom of touching your feet. I get that a lot in India. People bend down and touch my feet. At first I was so embarrassed. I stepped back, but that was embarrassing for the person who bent down. So now I just kind of don't know how to manage it, but I just stay there. But I felt like touching his feet. I was so moved that a person who's reached such a pinnacle of his career and could be making so much money from the rich is sitting in this dirty little clinic, I would say, because it was so crowded with people and, you know, I mean, when you have a lot of people, it's going to be like that, and serving the poor. So I've been very moved and very touched by, you know, most of the people, maybe not all, but most of the people I've met. And, you know, they really do have this thing of service. They have this concept of soft power very much in their heart. And they can understand, they believe in it. And, you know, one time I was asked, you know, because one time I was on our panel, and because we do a talk show in our program. I'll tell you in a minute about the programs. And I was asked, you know, what is the biggest obstacle to India coming forward and things really changing? And not because of the project or because it was the right thing to say, but I was happy that it really came from my heart. The biggest obstacle is just that Indians aren't awakened to their spirituality and the power of that spirituality. And really, I think that's all it really takes. And so it's, you know, it's really great to have the Brahma Kumaris doing a project like this. It's actually, in a way, quite, if you look at it from a broad perspective, it's quite political in a way, because it's really talking about, you know, ruling the world, running the world. But Baba says that this is a geopolitical organization. And so one time I thought, oh, yeah, so this is the political part of this. You know, it's all like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle putting this whole new world together. And so it's going very, very well. How it actually happens, how it works, is that cities in India approach us and ask us, can they do a future of power? Some of them are a bit scared because we run it on a very professional level, which means it's going to cost some money. Not too much, actually, and it's been quite okay, but still, it costs money. It's done at a very, you know, professional level. And they say to me, what did one of them say to me? We're thinking to do the future of power, but we heard that you are very strict and very, something like that, like very particular about everything. And I said, yes. And if you're not happy with that, please don't do it. Because we really want to do it in a very professional level. And so it's a very big learning curve in India, because often the programs start half an hour late. You know, people walk on and off the stage and the microphones don't work and all this kind of thing. But we really try to do it so that it's very streamlined and very professionally done. And mostly we achieve it. You can see it on Peace of Mind channel. Have any of you seen it? Yeah, so you can see it on the Peace of... It's usually live telecast on the YouTube, on our website, on Peace of Mind, and often on the local channels as well. But you know, we really do want to keep that standard, you know, and so whether it's the decoration of the stage and all of these things. So when I started, there was one brother from Mauritius, Dharamesh, and myself and Nizar. Nizar's in Africa. I'm here, and Dharamesh was doing all the kind of what we call back office. It was very hard, actually, because, you know, it's a big job. But we only did a few in those days. This year, we did 15 programs over 6 months. In the last month, we did 5 programs in 5 different cities. So we've really kind of fine-tuned this program. And also what's happening is because of an emphasis, Baba said that it's very important to reach the media. And the media should know that these big people are coming to the Brahmakumaris programs. And so this year we've put a lot more emphasis on media. In some cities, not big cities like Nagpur, Rajkot, we're getting 54, 62 media articles. Can you imagine? 62 articles coming in the press and, you know, all the electronic media and all these different things. So, you know, but to get it all done, you know, to get the media done, to get the backstage, because, you know, if you go into a city, they don't necessarily know how to run everything from behind the stage. And Nizar rightly says, people don't come to our programs to watch us move the microphones around. So we try to be so perfect that you don't notice anything like that, like microphones or waiting for a candle to light the candle or, you know, and so it's quite fun actually. I think mostly the centers really enjoy this kind of fine-tuning of the program, and they feel that they learn a lot. But sometimes they feel resistant and sometimes they feel annoyed because we are so particular about everything. But mostly it's very well received. So then what happens, the cities ask us, can you do this program in our city? And one thing I've appreciated also with Nizarbai, in a way I appreciate it, no matter how small the city, he says yes. So we just did a program in Firozabad, which is really a small place. There wasn't even a hotel. And why I say I somewhat appreciate it, the other side is I have to go and stay in that city for 10, 12 days to invite the guests. And they're often not very clean and comfortable little places to be. So, but still, that's part of the job. But I really appreciate that he will do it for whoever has the courage and enthusiasm to say they want to do it. So then what happens is that I go to the cities 2 months before the program to invite people. The center chooses about 150 people that they think would be suitable for the dialogue from all different fields. Then they bring that list down to 60, and I usually meet 50 to 60 people in 10 days. So it's pretty full on, 5, 6, 7 appointments a day. But, you know, the center does all of that work of getting their biodatas, and we approve that, yes, this looks like a good group. You can go ahead and take appointments. So the centers do all of that. So when I go, they just tell me, okay, now we're going here, now we're going there, now we're going to this one. And I just, you know, read the bio data before I go, so I have some idea of who I'm meeting. So this is how, you know, it kind of operates. I stay in the center with the sisters, and one day I'd like to tell you all about that because it's a very good experience. In fact, it's the small sisters that I believe are the backbone to the future of power, because they give me so much love and take so much care that I wouldn't be able to live out of a suitcase in India for 3.5 years without them. So they are really, you know, whenever I feel fed up or tired, you know, I think of them because they're really an inspiration, all these small sisters in the centres. So, you know, I go and I meet these people. But you can imagine getting appointments with, you know, the top leaders of your city. And in India, that's really big. Because, like, there's a film director, for example, in Karnataka. So, you know, it's only really one language. He's directing only in one language. But I think something like, you know, he's made something like 1,000 movies, and the audience of just Karnataka language is in the millions. So, you know, even though it's local, it's quite big. And so to get these appointments, what the centres are saying to the VIPs, they call up and they say, we are organising an international dialogue. We're only inviting 40 leaders, two of the top from each profession, and someone has come especially from Australia to invite you. So can you give us an appointment? It's pretty hard to say no to that, isn't it? Because they're getting honoured, someone's coming all the way from Australia, and a lot of these people have been overseas. They're quite interested to meet us, you know, so it's really working very well. And some of the countries around the world now are interested to perhaps have the dialogue there. So we're just talking how that might work, because actually in July I said to Nizabai, I said, from March, I'm packing up my suitcase. I can't live out of a suitcase anymore, traveling like this in India, because for 5 months I'll be on the road, just going from city to city to city, you know. So I've done it for 3.5 years, so now. But we've finished the 32 cities that Nizabai initially told Baba that he would do. So 32 cities in India, one in Australia, and we've just got Pokhara and Kathmandu, these two more to finish before March. And then we're waiting to see what also Baba says, what should be the future. Because I think, as you see, Baba's called, you know, Nizabai onto the stage many times and is giving good attention to the project. But Nizabai's very special, and I'll just end by, you know, one thing that really captures what soft power is. And this is also what I tell the people, that, you know, he went 20 years ago when he started practicing meditation. He was the chairman of 6 companies. And he had a lot of stress and a lot of anger. Now he's the chairman of 54 companies, and he says he's got hardly any anger and no stress. Now that's soft power, isn't it? Who could be the chairman of 54 companies? And he's doing this project as well. So it's very convincing, and he's also made all of those 54 companies free of corruption and is starting a blue company system of certifying companies, other companies who want to be certified as corruption free. So the whole package is good. He's a Muslim. Nizabai is a Muslim. I come across as a Christian. So all of this adds to the curiosity. I think first of all they start with curiosity and then they get more interested. So that's a snapshot of the future of power. You can see the website, all the information's there, all the past summary reports. It's www.futureofpower.org. So very easy, you can go there and see that, and see the programs online on Peace of Mind. Om Shanti.